Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Wednesday. You know what that means. We are joined once again by the great Paul Bredell. You can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredell. Paul, welcome back to the show. How the heck are you doing?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always happy to be here talking Packers with you.
Fun every single week. By the way, the feedback that we get on your shows is absolutely amazing. People love you, so we're glad that you are back every single week. And of course, if you're not checking out Paul's stuff over on ESPN Lacrosse, and even if you want to check out Colts stuff on the Colts Wire, it's worth it because Paul covers everything in an amazing way. But Paul, always love having you on. Let's start Packers-Texans, of course. Packers pick up a key win against Houston in a very hard-fought game. Both of these teams, you could tell out on the field, very much wanted this one. For two teams that are on opposite sides of the conference, there was things that were definitely a little chippy. We got some Stephon Diggs, Jaire Alexander stuff. It was a really fun game, but I'll let you take it in any direction that you want to start. What were your key takeaways from this one?
Yeah, I know we'll get into all these, but it felt like in each phase of the game, there was just this kind of one big thing for the Packers in this game. And I'll just kick things off on the defensive side of things with Jeff Hafley and just the game plan he put together last Thursday when we were meeting with him, the other coordinators. You know, there always seems to be something when you're talking to, listening to Jeff Hafley that just jumps out to you. And one of the things from last Thursday that I think was just on absolute full display during Sunday's game was the adaptability, the evolving playbook. Jeff Hafley said something to the effect of, this isn't a plug and play playbook. This isn't a, here's the playbook, memorize it, we're good to go. Like, it is always changing. It is always evolving. There are tons of variables in play where, yes, like any coordinator, he's going to have his core concepts, core principles that you lean on, that you build everything around, but how they go about it on a week-to-week basis, what's the opponent do? What, when they're, you know, and when we're self-scouting, how will they attack us? How are we going to counter that? How are we going to try to get these different versatile players involved in the game plan? How are we going to disguise what we're doing? There's so many moving parts with Jeff Hafley that really on a week-to-week basis, what we're seeing from this defense, like, it's not the same. There's different variations, iterations of it each and every week. And the big thing this week was the blitzing. I apologize. I can't remember where I saw this, but I saw the Packers blitzed on 10 of the Texans' 15 third down attempts. And it's not just, again, it's not just sending an extra linebacker. We saw Xavier McKinney come on the blitz. We saw two linebackers blitz. We saw Cooper and Wilson stunting while they're blitzing. We saw a linebacker blitz, and then one of the defensive linemen drop back to the middle of field. Like, we've talked about the illusion of complexity on the offensive side of the ball for Matt LaFleur, keeping defenses off balance, giving them different looks. We're seeing that on defense right now with Jeff Hafley. Like, he's disguising a lot of things. There's just a perfect marriage right now between what the defensive front's doing, what the back end's doing, how they work together, and it's making things really, really challenging for offenses.
It's such a beautiful thing. We've just lacked any sort of like cohesive defense, it feels like, for so long, and job not done. There's a long season to go, but it just feels so much different. And I remember his first press conference, and so much of the takeaways when Jeff Hafley first came in were more single high safety, and they're going to stop the run, and they're going to be penetrating, and this is going to be a perfect system for certain players, and maybe some more press man-to-man coverage on the outsides, and all of these little different buzz things. And they're all fun takeaways and kind of fun to go over and discuss. But man, the thing that stood out to me right away was this was not going to be just a one-size-fits-all defense. This was going to be a defense that they were going to build and have a game plan for every single week. And it was going to evolve, and it was going to change, and it was going to morph. And one week you could see one thing, and the next week you could see something entirely different. And he talked about on a couple different occasions in the offseason of how he wants to put players in positions to be successful based on their skill sets. And I think one of the things he talked about was even, hey, you know, yeah, you know, a lot of times we might play our defensive ends with their hand in the dirt, but if a player's really good standing up, why would I not have them standing up? Like, he's just like very flexible and malleable based on everything. And he takes very clearly everything into consideration, the players and scheme that he's going against, the players that he has at his disposal, what those players do well, how to get his best players on the field. And man, Paul, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that we talked about it, I think, on the sidelines when Keyshawn Nixon was on the outside, we're like, oh yeah, that must be like a, you know, just cross training thing case there's some emergency situation. Like, yeah, I guess that makes sense that they could at least practice with that a little bit, but nowhere in my mind did it ever go to, Keyshawn will end up being the outside corner at some point, yet here we are and it's working really well. And it just is a testament to his malleability and adaptability and finding ways to be successful based on what he has at his disposal. And it is a joy to watch right now.
Yeah. Shameless plug, ESPN Lacrosse, Sports Lead 3 to 6 Monday to Friday with John Papadopoulos. Andy's on there as well. But I was doing that show on Monday now, and one of the questions John had asked me was something along the lines of, you know, obviously it's not like Halfley was this high profile, you know, defensive coordinator hire that was out there and everyone was trying to pursue Jeff Halfley to get him on their team. So the question John asked was, you know, what about him has gotten that maybe flew under the radar? You know, and again, he had a head coaching job. Not that he was being pursued heavily because of that, but what's gotten him, helped him get this defense to that point? What qualities about him? And we just spent time talking about the scheme, the X's and O's, the playbook. The thing that jumps out the most to me with Halfley in terms of getting what he is out of this group right now is he is so, so much players focused. You know, there's that old saying, X's and O's and Jimmies and Joes. Jeff Halfley's about the Jimmies and Joes. And again, the X's and O's absolutely matter. But he's talked about this. He knows the individual goals that each of his defensive players have. He wants them all to accomplish that. He understands the strengths of each of those players. What do they do really well? And how can I put them in positions to maximize that? I forget who said it. It was one of the players at the start of the training camp. But during OTAs, the off-season programs, he had said Jeff Halfley wasn't doing like a ton of coaching and practice, right? He was observing. Jeff Halfley, during those off-season programs, he was learning. He's trying to watch in real time as these practices are unfolding. All right, what does Quay Walker do really well? What does Keyshawn Nixon do really well? And he's obviously figured out, you know, that recipe. And now knowing those skill sets with his ability, his willingness to adapt, to evolve the playbook, we're seeing these players in tons of different positions. We're seeing them play that fast, physical brand of football that we heard so much about. But you can't do that if you don't fully grasp what your responsibility is, if you don't fully grasp what the responsibility of the player next to you is. So I think a lot of the success, again, we'll focus on the X's and O's, but I think it goes back to the relationships he's developed, his understanding of his players, where they're at their best, and then, of course, putting them in the positions to maximize that.
Yeah, and I just love how, again, the adaptable word, the malleable word, whatever we want to call it. I don't know if you were there the day where Halfley came over and coached the defense, the cornerbacks.
Yes.
And we're like right around the sideline. We could hear everything he's doing. And it was just awesome just to see him teach and having that teaching ability, which is something that Matt LaFleur has talked about a ton of how important it is for their coaches on all levels, coordinators, coaches, everyone, to have the ability to teach the players. But the one that stood out to me was this. So on this specific day, for those listening, they are working on press man coverage. So they're working on the different techniques of working in press man coverage. And so Halfley comes over and acts as the defensive backs coach for the day. And he's kind of teaching them what he wants to see on specific plays. So there's a specific way that he wants them. And obviously I'm paraphrasing all of this to some extent, but there's a specific way that he wants them to jam and release at the line of scrimmage. And so they do it and everyone's doing it. And then Jair does it. And it you could tell that Jair, it didn't really quite feel right. So Halfley pulls Jair aside and he's like, you know, he kind of asks like what Jair is doing and what he basically came down to is like, Jair, he's like, we're teaching this a specific way because not everyone can move the way that you do. And he's like, and he's basically like, what you are doing when you do this is what we're ultimately trying to accomplish. But like, we ultimately have to do it a slightly different way because not everyone can do it the way that you're doing it. He's like, you're getting to that final destination. You're doing it a completely different way, but you're getting to the destination that we want, you know, quicker and better because you're you, basically, is what it kind of came down to. And not in a way that was throwing anyone else under the bus or whatever, but you could understand that like, First of all, I love that Jair was wanting that extra. Like, how do you want me to do this exactly? And was asking for that. But two, I love the fact that, again, Jeff Hafley didn't one size fits all this and say, well, we're going to teach this and everyone's got to do it the exact same way because this is the way that we're going to do it and yada, yada, yada. Like, no, it was like, you're doing this well already. And if I try to tweak something or tinker with it, you're probably actually going to be worse than what you're already doing. So we're not going to mess with what you're doing. And I loved the mindset that he had. I loved the teaching ability. And then it just, you can tell all of this stuff plays out through the course of a game as he's adapting game plans. And we're seeing it in, you know, the proof of it in the second half performances of this defense, where they're basically not like allowing points in the second half over these course of the last 5 weeks. So he is a very fun coordinator to watch. And you can tell there's a lot of Matt LaFleur in his adaptability and teaching ability, what Matt does on the offensive side and some of the illusion stuff. There's a lot of that that's going on with Jeff Hafley now on the defensive side as well. Hey everybody, it's week eight. Slow down season. You're going way, way, way too fast, but there's still plenty of NFL season left, which means there's still plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done right now. When you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. Of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. This week, I'm going with kickers. You heard me right. I am going with kickers. Justin Tucker, he is going to kick a ton of field goals against the Browns. Younghoe Koo is going to kick a bunch against the Bucks, and Brandon McManus is going to do well in his return to Jacksonville. So it is kicker week for me on Prize Picks. As always, there are plenty of options for you to choose from. But remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yeah, I forgot about that with the cornerbacks and on the sled there. But out of all the 2 minute drills, the 11 on 11, the joint practice with the Ravens, like that 10 ish minutes, that was easily a top three moment of training camp for me. Like Matt LaFleur talked about Hafley's experience in the NFL was, you know, he came up cutting his teeth working in the secondary with the defensive backs. And that was, that was an important trait for LaFleur as part of the hiring process. And you could tell when he's working with the cornerbacks, like he's just in his wheelhouse right now in terms of the teaching, the technique, the footwork, every single element of it was so, so detailed. And if one of those players didn't do it exactly how it was supposed to be done, get back in, you go before the next person, cause you're going to do this right before we move on.
Yeah. It's so fun to watch. I'm right there with you. It was one of the best parts of training camp. And I was just a sponge just sitting there, just like, oh, this is amazing. Just soaking in every moment of it. But I know you also wrote, we'll go to the offensive side about Jordan Love's superpower. And I know Matt kind of talked about this in his post-game presser, but that final drive really displayed what some of the traits are that make Jordan so special.
Yeah, LaFleur called his resiliency his superpower. And that's not the first time that LaFleur has referenced Love's resiliency, speaking to just whether he's thrown five touchdowns, whether he's thrown five picks. Like, Jordan Love is in the moment. He's just focused on what the task at hand is. And while it sounds easy to do, obviously it's not, to not let what, the first almost four quarters of the game, which was up and down for this team, to not affect your play, just to go out there like it's a brand new series and take advantage of the situation. And I think, obviously, outside of the outcome where he led them into field goal range, I think one of the areas of growth in that specific situation that was on display for Love that I mentioned in the article was you didn't necessarily see him. Like, he was comfortable taking what was there. And again, go back to the NFC Championship game with the 49ers, the roll into the right, the throw across his body, interception. I think it was like the Denver game, maybe the Steelers game, if I'm remembering correctly, like in those kind of final minutes, there were some interceptions in there. And again, situation matters. You need a field goal versus in some of those instances, you need a touchdown again. And I want to make sure that it's clear that yes, those are different, but where I'm going with this is you saw someone, a more inexperienced player at that time, who's just trying to make a play, and you love that, but you're forcing the ball in those situations. Whereas Sunday, again, there were some chances that he took trying to push the ball downfield, but he finished the drive, I think 5 for 8. And it was completions of like 6 yards, 8 yards, 12 yards, 13 yards, like quick, the out to Crafts, a couple slants, like just taking what was there. So again, the fact that they finished the drive out, obviously that's what matters most. They got in field goal range, but it's how they did it. And I think that showed a lot of growth in terms of Love and just his development. And I know he's in, is it year five? He's in year five now in the NFL. Yep. Second as being the starter, but in terms of just the grand scheme of the NFL, in terms of experience at the quarterback position, still a young player. Like he is still very much learning. And Matt LaFleur even said last week in regards to the conversation around the interceptions, pushing the ball versus taking the checkdowns, like even LaFleur even said, like, you know, there's still a learning process that's taking place right now in terms of when to try to take those chances versus when to just take what's available. And in a crucial moment in a game that things weren't going all that great, you know, he responded by just taking what was there, marching him down the field, and extremely valuable.
Yeah, big time. And I thought you saw growth from Jordan in that exact way of just, again, taking what was there, not trying to do too much. There's a couple plays, right? There's the first play where I don't think he entirely sees the linebacker underneath and it gets tipped and then Dobbs tipped it and the safety tips it. And you're like, oh, that was a little bit risky. There's the throw to Dontavian Wicks down the field on the final drive where, you know, going back and watching that, watching in real time and then rewatching again, like Wicks is open and I think he's a tick late to it. And then he's got to throw off his back foot because he's pressured. I look to see it, like, could he have maybe stepped into it? Like maybe, but I can understand again, based on the pressure, why he didn't. I don't mind the decision. Cause again, Wicks was open and that's a potential game winning touchdown right there. But like overall, you know, he stayed within the offense and took what was there and made some big time completions to get Green Bay down in field goal range. And I think, you know, just getting that game winning drive, I think was important and just settling into it. And to your point, you know, the superpowers is resiliency is the superpowers also is just steady, calm demeanor. Mm-hmm. And despite throwing two interceptions in this game and maybe making a couple mistakes here and there, just never a doubt. And it felt like you could almost like there was a tangible feel going into that final drive of, all right, they're confident that they're going to go down and score points and get that game-winning field goal. And I think the bigger question everyone was asking was not, will they get into field goal range? It was more, will they make the field goal once they're in field goal range? But it's a credit to Jordan and the offense for driving down there, getting the opportunity, and then, of course, for McManus for hitting that through the uprights and getting the game-winning field goal.
And obviously right now, I mean, Love's 8 interceptions. I think they're the most or tied for the most in football. There's that conversation right now about striking that balance. But if we're going to point out the interceptions and the decisions, we got to point out the really, really, really good throws like that touchdown to Tucker Kraft. Like that's a part of this equation as well.
Yep.
And if you want Love to be, you know, take the check down more often, take what's there, you know, to a degree, depending on how often that happens, you're limiting one of the things about him that makes him so special, that makes him such a talented quarterback. And it's that arm talent. Yeah. Again, it goes back that not to say that there aren't coachable moments. There certainly are, but I think a lot of it is more so about the calculus that goes into the decision. You know, if Love's going downfield, I think in most instances, there's a reason for it. You know, there's been some, you know, just feel like a little bit chuck it up there type situations. But for the most part, it's, you know, what's the matchup? What's the coverage doing and him believing that he can take advantage of what's out there? Now, again, there's the calculus behind that. Does that mean that the decision and thought process is always right? No. Does that mean that there's things that have to get corrected and how he's identifying that stuff? Absolutely. But if we're limiting his opportunities to do that and his freedom within the offense to do that, you're taking away just a dynamic element within this offense. And like we said, the arm talent, we all know it. We all see it, how special it is. Like to a degree, you're going to be limiting that.
And it's funny because I don't know if you remember, but when Jordan was first starting off, one of the things that Matt made a cognizant effort of and even mentioned in the media, like, because people would ask, like, what does Jordan need to do? He would say, I just want him to hit his drop and I want him to rip it. Like, I want him to have confidence in throwing the ball and ripping it and putting the ball where it needs to go. And this is that. Like, he is getting to his drop, he is ripping it, and he's putting it in a place far more often than not where his players have the opportunity to be successful. And yes, there probably are a few throws here and there that he needs to rein in. And I have full confidence in Tom Clements that he'll figure out that and get him on the right, you know, wavelength. And we saw it in spades at the end of last year where he took great care of the football and made explosive plays. But, you know, I don't have a major issue right now. If you're going to get the big time high end plays and explosive, you know, opportunities because of what he's doing, I'm willing to live with a bad throw or a bad decision every now and again, because you're going to end up on the positive side of the ledger far more often than not. And it's not to say that, you know, Matt LaFleur made it very clear, it's still job number one is to take care of the football. So you still got to figure out a way to do that. But you also have to figure out a way to be, you know, willing and able to take chances when they're there for you. And Jordan is clearly willing and able to do that. And again, I do think they come out on the positive end of that far more often than not. I even look at a play. I don't know if you remember the Emmanuel Wilson check down on a third down where he gets it out to him and Wilson makes somebody miss. That play is a play where he's pressured, and at the last second, he gets it out and throws a backwards pass, by the way, which ends, you know, could have theoretically been, you know, a fumble or it goes out of bounds. Like we saw a play, what, a few weeks ago where he throws one that way and it goes out of bounds. And there was a, and like everyone is like, oh, you know, he panicked and he threw it that way and it looks there. You have to live with some of those, because you get some of these where at the last second he gets pressured. He knows where Wilson is. He throws it backwards, but Wilson's right there. Now Wilson's got it one-on-one. He makes a guy miss and he picks up a huge first down. It's not always just the throws down the field, but you have to live with some of that sometimes because the rewards are also huge. And I think for the most part, he's straddling the line well, and there's a couple that he needs to rein in just a little bit, but I have no doubt he'll get there.
Yeah, and that play specifically, that is taking the check down. Like if you like he went left to right across, nobody's there. So he took what was left at that point. And it, you know, I think naturally it's you know, you watch the Packers, you focus on the Packers. That's whether good or bad, that's what you're emphasizing. Wow, look at that player. Wow, why didn't they do this better? But watching JT O'Sullivan's quarterback school going through Love's plays, he was giving out a ton of compliments to that Houston defense. Like
they were awesome.
They made things really, really difficult for Love, for Matt LaFleur. Like Matt LaFleur said after the game that they, you know, Houston, they kicked their butts. They did an excellent job. And I think it was that first interception of the game. Like basically O'Sullivan breaks it down and he goes, you know what you do differently? Hindsight 2020, you call a different play, because Houston just defended it so well. And, you know, any of the options that could have loved maybe could have gone elsewhere were covered up. So Houston did a really good job of just taking away what the Packers do, stressing that offense. And I think still at the end of the day, you know, glass half full again, 24 points in a game where they are taking stuff away, where you're struggling, where you're frustrated in how things are going. Again, that's a good performance.
Yeah, I talked about that exact same thing with Aaron Nagler on Let's Talk Football yesterday, and I was so impressed by this Texans defense, especially missing players. And I hadn't had the opportunity to watch O'Sullivan yet, who's beyond amazing. Anytime you get an opportunity, it's always worthwhile. But I thought they were incredible, and just what they were taking away. Like, there are not many coordinators or, you know, play callers, coaches, etc., that ever feel like they are even a half tick ahead of Matt LaFleur, and it felt like this Texans defense was a half tick ahead of Matt LaFleur. And Matt LaFleur, it wasn't like for a lack of trying, right? He tried to stretch them horizontally with all the reverses and end arounds, and Houston was ready for all of it. They tried to do play action. They tried to run up the middle. They tried to go deep. They tried to go, like, it was just like, no matter what, Houston had a solution for it. And we have not seen that by far and away more often than not against Matt LaFleur. And you could tell, like he said, like, yeah, they kicked our asses in that game. And they did. And to your point, it's the exact same thing I said to Aaron, was if that's the bad game where the other team kicked your ass and you played a really, really good football team and you still put up 24 points and you still had the game winning touchdown drive and still had two big explosive plays and found a way to, like, if that's the bad game, you're in a very, very, very good spot. And I give them credit for finding a way to win against the Texans defense that was just on one on Sunday.
Yeah, we've talked about it on here before. You're not going to have your A-plus game every week. So when you don't, are you able to just find a way? Are you able to gut out a win? And Packers did that again. Just like you said, a really good team.
Yeah, very much so. All right, so I want to talk about this because I think it's always stupid and ridiculous when somebody says so-and-so is a punter and they are a weapon. They are a weapon. Daniel Whalen is a freaking weapon. Like, he is a weapon out there on the field. And what he is doing to change field positions, it is a massive, massive game changer for this team. And it, like, man, do you remember, Paul, the days where Green Bay didn't have a punter and it felt like you were just giving the ball back and they were going to get advantageous field position and you're just pulling your hair out? Like, every time now he punts, it's like, I don't want to say there's an excitement because it's not that. I would rather have them be successful, but it's like, he is going to kick the snot out of this ball and he is going to put them in a disadvantageous position. And it is for as much of a punter can be fun to watch, it is fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, three straight possessions in that second half where he had a 60-plus yard punt just to absolutely flip the field. And in the game of football in general, but especially a close game against a good opponent, like those, you know, those outlier statistics, you know, like time of possession or field position battle, like that stuff gets enhanced. That stuff gets magnified when you're in a close game like this against a good opponent, and just gave the Packers defense that little extra breathing room, made the Texans offense have to drive, you know, an extra 20 yards, having to string together maybe two extra first downs for what they would have. So those punts alone, I mean, were massive in just the flip in the field, changing the dynamic for the Houston offense and how they play called that series. Just a huge trickle down effect from it. And then of course there's the hold on Matt Orchek's snap on the game winner, low to the left, and he just corralled it and like it was nothing. You know, McManus was completely in rhythm the entire time. Again, it was like it was nothing at that point. And one of the things that I've learned this week with the additional kicker conversation, although we've had a lot of it already this year, yeah, is that every kicker wants the ball held on the hold in a different fashion. And Whalen said that with McManus, just being the veteran that he is, he knows what he wants. And so he's a bit picky about it, but what was interesting was whether they're on the left hash, whether they're on the right hash, like there's different leans that, you know, Whalen has to do with the ball on the hold, things like that, like things you don't even think about. And
nope,
obviously they practiced it all week. Whalen talked about them doing film work with Rich Bisaccia on the snap, on the hold. And then Whalen said after the game that he would go home at night and in his living room, he'd sit in the middle of the living room floor and just do the hold, you know, left hash hold, right hash hold, center hold, just to drill it in over and over and over again. And I remember last year, so Whalen's first year with the Packers, and obviously they had Anders Carlson at that time. And one of the, you know, as really before we got into training camp, but one of the reasons I was kind of skeptical of like, are they going to keep the rookie punter with the rookie kicker, was because of the holding aspect of it. Remember, yep, you have Pat O'Donnell. And my thought going in was, all right, you have the veteran punter who's been through this, you know, to a degree that hopefully provides maybe a little extra stability with the rookie kicker where, all right, we don't have to worry about the hold component because we got this guy who's done a million times, going to be good to go. But behind the scenes, and Whalen was talking about this after the game as well, when they're in like the hotel for training camp early on, him and Broughton Hatcher, remember, he was a long snapper here for part of the summer in 2023, they're doing like 100 snaps a night in the hotel hallway. Hatcher's snapping it to Whalen, he's getting the hold down, boom, throw it back over and over and over again. And so it's that behind the scenes work. And Whalen, you know, he goes, I guess it paid off. It certainly did, but just really, really interesting because we see the result, right? We see the ball go through the uprights, but just all the nuances, the additional work, like anything in football, but a part of the game that we don't talk about a lot that obviously it was a huge impact in this game, and on a snap that wasn't all that great, Whalen just handled it with ease.
Yeah, the details on that stuff is insanely important. It's why a lot of times I almost try not to get into too much of the minutia on special teams, because there's so much of that stuff of like the angle of the snap to the angle of the ball to like everything. And it's just like, it has to be a well-oiled machine, and just one little thing is wrong and it may not go the way that you're hoping for. Also give McManus a ton of credit too, of like you say, it wasn't a perfect operation, but he just, you know, it was from Whalen's side of things, but the snap being awry to begin with, and mm-hmm, just figuring out a way, you know what, no matter what, I got to find a way to get this through the uprights. And we haven't exactly seen that from some of the younger kickers, and McManus found a way to do it in a very clutch moment. And it added an extra win to the win column for Green Bay, which could be very important, especially in the loaded NFC North division that they are in. Just jumping back to defense for just a moment, cause I'm bad at my job. Rashawn Gary, it felt like he was a little bit more set free this week, and it felt like Jeff Hafley really found some advantageous ways to utilize him as a pass rusher. It was interesting, a couple weeks ago, Hafley was asked about Rashawn Gary, and he basically said, we need more from Rashawn Gary, but Rashawn Gary needs more from us as well. Mm-hmm. Basically indicating we've got to put him in better positions to be successful. At the time, he was the third most chipped defensive end in all of football, which was not allowing him to get a lot of momentum. And it felt like they figured out some things in this game to kind of get him going.
Yeah, I think it was on the Texans opening possession after that interception. I can't remember if it was second or third down, but you have Gary standing up over the center, almost like a blitzing linebacker, and coming up the middle, getting the pressure. And by PFS numbers, this was easily Gary's most productive game. He had six pressures. I think his previous season high was three, had the sack. So obviously what they did worked. And I love you that you brought up that what Hafley had mentioned, because yes, we talk about Gary needing to do more, but Hafley taking the ownership of it. All right, what do we got to do to put him in a position? Again, knowing your players, understanding their strengths, how they can fit within your defense, and just finding ways to let him get after the quarterback, to have a one-on-one matchup, to put him in those positions where he can be successful. So again, going back to just the adaptability, the evolving, just excellent to see. And now that, you know, the next step's going to be, and I think LaFleur alluded to this a little bit on Monday, is all right, because you put this on tape now, right? So now there's less for opposing offenses, maybe less of the element of surprise, right? If you see Rashawn Gary in a different part of the field. So how do they respond to it? How do opponents now game plan for that, prepare for it? And what do you do moving forward, again, to continue to help Rashawn Gary be in those positions to be successful?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the interesting part as well. But overall, liked how they schemed him up. And I thought this is a real step in the right direction. And it also felt like Rashawn maybe just needed to get that layup in and maybe get him going a little bit. And sometimes you see the ball go through the net and you get a little bit maybe of some momentum. So hopefully for Rashawn, this was kind of the game that he needed to get kind of back in the swing of things. And hopefully this is just opening the floodgates. And now we're going to see a dominant Rashawn Gary for the remainder of the year. Just a couple of quick ones I want to ask you about. Sean Ryan, I don't know how you're feeling about it. I love the way that Sean Ryan is playing football right now. And Jordan Morgan, you can tell, is still going through some of those rookie moments. And you end up in this very interesting situation where it's very clear. And we heard from Steno right before Morgan came back that they clearly want him part of this rotation and getting those snaps because they recognize how talented he is and that they're going to need him probably this year, but in the long term as well. But you also have the situation where, at least in my opinion, Sean Ryan is just very clearly outplaying Jordan Morgan right now. And we kind of saw it in this game where Morgan got those snaps early. And then I don't know if we saw Morgan in the second half, it wasn't much, maybe one drive here, there, but I think he was around what, like 18 snaps in this game, something like that. Whereas Ryan played a ton more than that. I'm just very intrigued as to how they go about this, because I was all for, like, last year when they did Rashid Walker and Yosh Nijman, and it was clear that Walker won it and it was time to move forward with Rashid Walker. And on the other side, it was John Runyon Jr. and Sean Ryan, and you didn't really have a clear winner, and kind of keeping those guys rotating made a little bit more sense. But the competition's great, but when somebody kind of wins the competition, it does feel like, all right, now do you just go with that guy? But I'm curious your thoughts on where Green Bay goes from here at that rotating guard spot.
I'm really, really torn as well, because again, you bring up Steno's comments, and it's not just recently, like throughout the summer, they've been incredibly high on Jordan Morgan, just the potential that he brings. And like Steno said, like, if you're going to maximize that, you got to get him reps, you got to get him in-game reps, you got to get him that experience. But on the flip side, we've also heard Steno say that, yeah, when asked, yeah, if someone does emerge, like, yeah, it's going to, we'll stop with the rotation or cut back significantly on it. So we've heard both sides of it. And now it feels like we're at that crossroads, because, you know, Ryan's taking advantage of it. The two games again, I think Tennessee and Minnesota games, I think were the ones that Steno referred to were his best in his career. Like, the best was Tennessee, and then he one-upped himself in the Minnesota game. Took a step back after that, but he's progressing really, really well. And his strength was always in the run game as a blocker, but he's finding that consistency and pass protection. And going back to last year, you asked Stanovich about him, that kind of always circled back to that, to the pass protection consistency is where Ryan really needed to improve if he was going to be a steady starting guard in the NFL. And that's a part of his game where over the summer as well, we've seen those incremental improvements coming in. So as far as what to expect moving forward, I really don't know. I think they're still going to find a way to work Morgan into the equation again, for all the reasons just mentioned. But I tend to think, as long, you know, you ride the hot hand too, right? And so I think this last week, like you said, it was like 45 snaps to 15. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes from, you know, alternating rotations to, all right, Ryan, you get two or three, and then Morgan, and then two or three, to where it's still favoring Ryan, but you're still getting Morgan some of those opportunities.
I'll just say this, and just throwing it out there for the sake of throwing it out there. You do have a bye week coming up. And Jordan Morgan's initial position and his position all throughout college was left tackle. I would argue that so far through the course of this season, Rashid Walker has been the one that's been a little bit more underwhelming than maybe even Sean Ryan has been. Like I said, I think Sean Ryan's off to a really great start this season. So I don't know if Green Bay would do that. And I love Rashid. I think he will settle in at some point this year. And we saw it at the end of last year. But I do wonder if, like, you kind of recognize, all right, Sean Ryan kind of won that one. Now Sheed is struggling a little bit. Do we maybe push him? And again, we saw it last year when Rashid Walker got pushed, because Walker started to struggle at the beginning of last year. Then they went to the rotation with Nyman. All of a sudden it was like Rashid, like the light bulb went on. I'm like, all right, I got to step my game up. And he did. And he was great in the second half of last year. I wonder if maybe there could be something there, but either way, I'm with you. I do think they find a way to get Morgan on the field just to continue to get him those reps. But more than anything, it's a good problem to have. Like, there's a lot of those on the roster right now. And I'm very happy that Sean Ryan is playing the way that he's playing so far.
I was just going to say, really, really great development on his part.
Yeah, big time, big time. Let's go to the defensive side just really quick. Again, I just want to talk about snaps still. Javon Bullard, only 29 snaps in this game, seemed very much more of a 4-3 base defense sort of thing, which is why his snaps were down, not necessarily getting displaced, other than the fact that it has been more obvious over the last couple of weeks that Evan Williams seems to kind of be the starting safety now, and they're not really taking him off the field, which I think is the right decision. But you do end up in a situation where Javon Bullard's still playing really good football and they could only find 29 snaps. So another good problem to have, but that'll kind of be one that's worth keeping an eye on as well.
Yeah, like you said, very much the game plan oriented dictating this one. And I mean, nothing that we've seen is going to suggest that Evan Williams and him are going to, you know, find a way to split those free safety snaps. Like, that looks like it is Evan Williams' job next to Xavier McKinney, which puts Bullard in the slot. And, you know, just the nature of the beast by being a nickel cornerback, while most of an NFL team snaps are going to come in that alignment, not all of them are. And so just game plan dependent, seems like for the time being anyways, we're going to see kind of an ebb and flow with Javon Bullard in his snaps, just depending when they're in nickel versus when they're in base. Because right now, while they have a ton of options in the secondary, that the depth that they have, it is starting to take shape in terms of what they're going to do. Keyshawn Nixon, like, he's their boundary corner, even in base, and they're working in Eric Stokes a little bit, 5-10 snaps these last couple of games. Carrington Valentine's not seeing any defensive snaps. So I think what we're seeing in recent weeks, at least for the time being, because again, things can change, but at least for the time being, it's Williams, McKinney deep, Bullard in the slot, Jair and Nixon are your boundary corners.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it primarily will stay that way. Although I will say, I don't put anything by Jeff Hafley. If he feels like there's a game where Javon Bullard is going to be better as a safety, and maybe they want that heat-seeking missile coming down a little bit more from the back end, I could see there's potentially being games where maybe Bullard does get a few more of the snaps next to Xavier McKinney. So again, that's the beautiful thing, kind of where we started, is the adaptability and the malleability of this defense. They can do anything at any moment, and if he feels that that's going to be best, it could be best. So I wouldn't entirely write it off that we could see Javon Bullard in some of those situations again at safety next to Xavier McKinney. All right, last but not least, quick thoughts, Packers, Jacksonville coming up this Sunday. Anything you're going to be kind of looking for in this one?
I think it's one of those games where, you know, the Packers, they're the better team in this matchup, and you just want to see them go out there and play that way. Watch them go win a game by, you know, two scores where it doesn't necessarily come down to the wire like it has in some of these recent games. So I think that's the big thing. Just, you're the better team in this matchup on both sides of the ball. Go out and operate as such. And again, going back to some of the reoccurring issues this season, just no self-inflicted or limited self-inflicted mistakes, because obviously that was a big part of the Texans game, the turnovers, penalties as well. I think they were flagged 8 times in that one. So again, a clean performance. You're the better team. Go out and operate as such.
We saw a proof of concept 2 weeks ago of them putting together a full team win against Arizona and what that can look like. We saw proof of concept last week of playing a very good football team and coming away with a win, because their other wins were fine, but they weren't obviously anything like no Houston Texans type wins. They got a win against a good team last week. What I would love to see is, we know how dynamic and explosive this offense was. I was watching the Ravens last night. It's a totally different style of offense, of course, and Lamar Jackson pretty good at quarterback, but they just went right through Tampa Bay's defense and put up 40 some points. And I kind of want to see, and I'm not saying it has to happen this week, and I'm not saying they need to consistently put up 40 points or anything like that, but I want to see now proof of concept of exactly what this offense can be when you got like the fully operational Death Star, when everything's going right and you limit those self-inflicted wounds. Maybe make sure that you got that one flaw in the Death Star, you know, taken care of so that they can't blow it up with the tiny fighter. But I digress. If they can have that one game where, all right, offense is cooking, I want to see what that looks like. And maybe it comes this week, maybe it's later in the year, maybe it's when they need it most. But I'd like to see this offense put that game plan together that really shows, we are here, we are ready, and you're going to have to, you know, bring everything you got to stop us, because this is what we can do at any given moment. I would love to see that be the case this week against Jacksonville.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been the stretches. We've seen the stretches, but get the four quarters of that.
Yeah, show me it. I want to see that 40-point performance, Packers offense. Give it to me. I need it like I need oxygen. All right, Paul, you're the absolute best. Tell us all about ESPN Lacrosse and where we can find you on social media.
I appreciate it, Andy. Check out all my work, ESPNLacrosse.com. What we started this episode with, talking about Jeff Hafley, have an article up there. I think there's a lot of great quotes in there from Hafley, from LaFleur on what he's seen on Hafley. So check that out. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Brettle.
Yeah, give him a follow again at Paul_Brettle. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. Go check out all of his work. And of course, we'll be back here 365 days a year. So make sure not to miss anything. We will see you all very soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.